chapter 2 is building up. Remember where we left off last week, where Kohelis was saying, like, you know, it's about wisdom and about knowledge, and we talked about the challenges of wisdom and knowledge, and Yosef Das, Yosef Machov, the more you know, the more pain you have, and sometimes it's just better not to have too much knowledge. So now it goes into a little bit of a different direction. And there's 11 verses, but we're just going to try to look at it more in an overview and look at a couple details. But here's what he says now in chapter 2. Amartini balibi. So I said in my heart, Lecha na enascha besimcha. I'm going to go, and enascha is very difficult to translate, but it's something like, you know, libate, like implies alcohol. So I'm going to go and just kind of enjoy life. Ure'e betov, and I'm just going to try to enjoy the good. But then I realized even that is futile, a waste of time. Why? So he said, L'schok amarti muhulal, l'simcha mazu asik. I started to realize, what good is there in joy, in happiness? What does happiness do? Tarti balibi. So I went two ways. I started to venture out. Balibi, in my heart, limshoch b'yayin, to say, just start drinking. Why don't I just drink and enjoy? Eat, drink, and be merry, which he's going to say later. As Basari, I just drink. Balibi noheg b'chachma, while at the same time, my heart would kind of also investigate wisdom. Ulechos b'sichlus, and I'll just kind of grab on to foolishness. Ad asher era eze tov livnei adam. Until I find kind of figure out which one is better. So I'm going to kind of go to different extremes in life and just try everything and kind of figure out what will finally make me happy. Asher yasu tachas hashemayim, what people can do underneath the heavens, mispar yamechayim, during their lives. So in other words, he's really struggling with finding himself and figuring out who he is, which is kind of sad given that, and we're going to talk about this again today, we believe that Kohelis was written at the end of his life. It's one thing that Shir HaShirim, you know, was written when he was a teenager, when he was young. And Mishlei was written when he was like in his 20s, let's say, in that age. That's understandable if someone's trying to find themselves in that phase of life. But now he's already kind of like old and jaded and also still trying to find himself. I guess it's not that unrealistic, but I'm just saying it's just interesting. So then he says, Higadalti ma'asi, I increased my actions. Baniti libatim, I built houses. And when he means houses, he means, you know, palaces and mansions. Natati li kramim, I planted vineyards. Asiti li ganot upraydesim, I built gardens and groves. Natati behem eitz kol pri, and I all kinds of tree bearing, you know, fruit bearing trees. Asiti li brechot mayim, I created like all kinds of pools of water. Hashkos mehem yaar, to irrigate forests, so mech etzim and various trees. Kniti le'avadim, I had all kinds of servants working for me. Shvachot ubnei bayit haitili, and I had all kinds of people living in my house helping me. Gam mikne bakar vetzon, I had all sorts of animals. You know, sort of reminding me of the Hearst Castle. I don't know, but okay. Anyways, I had all kinds of cattle and animals. Harbe hayali mikol shayil lefani b'Yerushalayim, more than anyone before me in Jerusalem, which was just his father, but there was also others. Kanas dili gam kesef v'zehav, I had all sorts of financial wealth, usugulos malachim, and all the sort of treasures of kings, v'hamedinos, and of the various countries, asitili sharim v'sharot v'tanugot, b'nei ha'adam shida v'shidot, and all sorts of singers and all the luxuries of the world. V'gedalti v'osafti mikol shehayah lefanei b'Yerushalayim, I had more than anyone before me in Jerusalem, chachamti chachmasi amdali, but and still my wisdom stayed with me. So in other words, I got very involved in amassing wealth and enjoying life, though my wisdom still stayed with me, which we'll talk about. V'chol asher sh'olu einai, and everything my eyes looked at, lo etzaltim him. I never got sick of it. And I mean, everything I saw, everything I wanted, I just took it. Lo menati et libi mikol simcha. I didn't hold my heart back from any joy. Ki libi sameach mikol amalei. My heart was happy with everything I did. V'zeh haya chelki mikol amalei. And that was my portion of all my work. Upanisi ani bechol ma'asi shasu yadai uva'amal shemalti. And I've gone out and done everything that there is to do, so to speak. V'hinei ha'kol heva u'ra'as ruach, and I realize now that it's all a waste of time. V'ein yitron tachas shemesh, and there was no value in anything that I did or anything underneath the sun. And I realized, by the way, if you're looking at the English, I didn't include that line in the translation. Sorry. And also, that was all my own translation. It probably was a better translation. Whatever it says in the English there is probably clear. But that's his opening to chapter 2. Any initial reactions, thoughts about his... We'll go into it in more depth, but... Yeah.
So, some of the things that he's describing actually are very familiar to us from the past few parshiyot in terms of collecting things and, like, using them to build something.
Uh-huh. Yes.
But he doesn't talk about that. We know that Shlomo did build the Beit HaMikdash.
Right.
So, he could be talking about that, in which case it's very sad that he says that it's all Teva. But... he could also be talking about just getting rich for...
Yeah, and he never says... Right, he never says it was for Hashem here. Some of them, of course, should point out exactly what you just said. Well, we're going to talk about that too in a second. Yes, good. But he builds so much, and he implies here that he did it for himself. He was like trying to find meaning in life. So he did it, but it was nothing like for the sake of God, for the sake of a higher purpose even, for the sake of something more meaningful, and then it became all worthless. Yes, many point that out. Yes, there's a lot being built, and a lot being built in the Torah has value. But he's building, and it doesn't seem to have value.
He also didn't seem to find value in doing for others. It's not like he opened hospitals. Or
very good. Yes, very focused on himself. You both pointed that out. He's not talking here a lot about what he did for other people. That's why there was a line that Viktor Frankl used to say, the door to happiness opens outward. That was his line, right? Viktor Frankl, the door to happiness opens. In other words, he's talking about simcha here. True happiness comes from helping people, making a difference, doing good for others. It's very personal here. It's very selfish here. In fact, the most I's are me. An editing chapter in Qehelet is found here. In fact, it's double first person singular if you look at it. Baniti li. It's not just I built for myself. I built for myself. I built it for myself. Not like it was, you know, constantly. It's constantly things that he was doing. You know, he had everything except for meaning, purpose, joy. But his error is, like when it says in Pirkei Avos, what did Hillel say? If I'm only for myself, im ein ani li mili, right? If I'm not for myself, who am I? Ukshani la atzmi ma'ani. But if I'm only for myself, then what am I? I wanted to tell you a story real quick about this. And then, because Rabbi Sachs pointed this out, that's where I first noticed this. Rabbi Sachs points out that this is the most selfish chapter in Qehelet, the most I, most talking about himself. So he tells a story, Rabbi Sachs, that... here it is, that when he was once, he came to America and he visited the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And when he went to visit the Rebbe, he actually got a private meeting with him because that was back in the days and that was more possible. But he said the Hasidim told him a story. The Lubavitcher Rebbe's first job when he came to America was he was the editor of the Lubavitch books. And they said they showed him a response. He said, one of the most brilliant letters the Rebbe wrote, he didn't write a single word. Not a single word. How did he do that? He said, someone sent him the following letter. I'll read you the letter, in fact, that he says. He says, someone had written him a letter with the following lines. Rabbi, I'm in a state of deep depression. I wake up each morning dreading the day ahead. I find that nothing lifts the clouds of gloom. I try various distractions, but nothing seems to work. I pray, but inspiration doesn't come. I need the Rebbe's advice. What was the Rebbe's response without writing a single word? Keep in mind that he was an editor. He just crossed out the eyes and sent it back to him. He said, if you're worried about, you know, depression or finding inspiration, stop focusing on yourself so much. It was all about, I try this, I want that, I need this, I need that. And this is here what Qehelet says. It's all about what he needs. And by the way, it's not. He just constantly says, I did. He also constantly uses the root of the word ase, asiti. I did this. I built that. Right. Look in hey. Asiti li ganot to pradesim. Right. Then vav. Asiti li brechot mayim. I did it. I made everything. Like as if. And he even talks about it with people. Right. Kaniti avadim. I acquired people. Like he expects to have this sense of like I control everything. I control the world. I'm in control of everything. But he's not. But then it's not satisfying.
I'm just not understanding why he thought he had wisdom. Because wisdom would be knowing this.
We're going to have to figure out what he means by wisdom. Meaning, we usually assume wisdom, I think the way we use it is you could know a lot of facts, but, you know, be a foolish person. Or you could be someone who gives very good advice, who understands how the world works, who understands people and You know, usually we assume that knowing facts is not wisdom, but understanding the world, understanding how people work, being good with, you know, that's wisdom. We have to understand if that's what he meant. We're going to come back to that, actually. But, right, because it seems to be not wise. Although you could be reading this, one way to read this is that he went through all this in his life when he was younger, and that's how he gained wisdom. Meaning, this, maybe he was talking about when he was younger and saying, I tried everything. I was so rich, I could do whatever I wanted. And I did try everything, and I realized that it was worthless because I was focused on myself. I was focused on controlling others. I was focused just on, you know, what would make me happy. And I realized that didn't work. And maybe that's the wisdom. But yeah, Rebecca.
But I think also, sorry, I came late. It's okay. But I think
that
also, like, the fact that he became, like, it's definitely going to train his mind in a certain way. Right? Like, I remember my mom telling me she used to visit her uncle, you know, in his old age, he had Alzheimer's, but, you know, his whole life he was a pediatric allergist. And so he was like, in the nursing home, and he was trying to, like, diagnose his friend.
Uh-huh.
And that was, right?
That's how he saw the world.
That's how he was. And so it's like, if your mind is, like, trained to think a certain way, it's like, there's no doubt about it that he's going to think, I, because he was for so many years. Like, how is he...
Uh-huh.
One of the greatest kings of all time.
Right. A lot of the Book of Chronicles, you see, is a meditation on the dangers of kingship, of leadership, of seeing yourself as being so powerful, and it leads to so much frustration for him.
Yeah.
Especially being that he was brought up by the king, and he was, you know, and then he's the king. Yeah.
So I'm trying to think about myself, and at different times in my career, I had different priorities. So early on, when I was just running my own lab, everything was about me, making sure everything worked.
Right.
When I became first the department chair, I had to learn, and I was very unhappy about being a department chair. I did not want to be. I was kind of forced to be.
Uh-huh.
And I was, it took me a while to figure out that to be a department chair, it had to be about everybody except for me.
Right.
And so it was that transition, but both of those times were, in my opinion, I had wisdom. I attributed it differently.
Interesting.
In how I placed it. And,
yeah.
And I got different satisfaction out of those two different times, but I had to learn during both of those times what was important and how to apply it.
Interesting. And you would think, like, in let's say even like in politics today, usually people kind of work their way up. It wasn't like that with Shlomo. I mean, his father's the king, and then he's the king.
Yeah.
Maybe part of this is the challenges of just, like, being thrust into kingship and, like, having to adjust to, like, all that power and control and that perspective on life.
So that got thrust onto me. And,
yeah.
I mean, it's a completely different story.
Yeah.
But I was miserable for probably 2 years. My wife would tell you.
Uh-huh.
I was miserable. And it was because I had to learn a completely different way of thinking about what brought me satisfaction and how I could contribute. And I had to learn that it was about everybody except me.
Uh-huh. And then once you were able to focus on others, if you were happy.
Once I learned that, I became very, you know, I really enjoyed what I was doing.
Right. Interesting. So here we have Shlomo here focusing on himself and not happy. Yeah. Yeah.
And it seems like there's a balance to be had. Like, you have to find it for yourself.
Yes.
And others. So you can't just exclusively do for others and then
right.
abandon yourself, and you can't just do yourself. And
well, yeah. So actually, so let's look inside, because he's going to talk about this exact, that's a great point. So when you look down, let's just look at a couple of the commentaries here. What was going on? What do they say was going on for him? So like Rashi there says, Hoil v'chein hu, since it was, this is on that first one, Amarti ani belibi, I said in my heart, Lechana anascha besimcha, I'm going to try to enjoy life and have happiness. Hoil v'chein hu, so since that was his goal, Echdal li min hachachma, so I stopped, for some time I stopped focusing on wisdom. V'esok b'mishta tamid, and I'm just going to focus on, go to another extreme. In other words, I had been focused on wisdom, and now I was like, you know what? That's not so fun. I'm going to just enjoy life. And so I'm going to go to a totally other extreme. So now he's like intentionally exploring foolishness, so to speak, to see if it's good. But this attitude obviously is what's going to lead to his downfall in many ways. So Ibn Ezra there says, Yadabir im nafsho, he spoke to his heart, to his soul. B'ikra hololus, with the just frivolities. Lechana and nascha besimcha, let's go enjoy life. Im chachma tolid kas, because remember, the last thing we said in the last chapter was, Yosef Das, Yosef Machov, the more you know, the more pain you have. So he already dealt with wisdom. He was like, you know what? Being so smart is not so fun because it caused me to be frustrated. Like I was suffering when I was so knowledgeable and exploring all the wisdom in the world and trying to understand why people do things. That was frustrating. I wasn't happy with that. So maybe I'll go to a different extreme and try to just enjoy life and see how that is. And let's look at this next one. I want to show you. So the way the next pasuk, he takes it. So then on page 2, when it says l'schok amarti mehulal, I said with joy that's just a waste. L'simcha mazoseh, but I started to realize what good is that. So the Gemara has a very interesting way of understanding this. The Gemara in Shabbos Lamed Amud Beis on the top of the page there, it says, "V'shibachti ani et hasimcha." I commended joy, simcha shel mitzvah. So the Gemara assumes it must be talking about simcha shel mitzvah. It can't be just talking about frivolous joy. Ulesimcha mazdeo say. So what point does simcha do? Zu simcha she'ena shel mitzvah. When I said, what good does it do? That's when it's not the simcha of a mitzvah. So in other words, the simcha of being involved in doing something that's a mitzvah is worthwhile. But when it's a simcha that's not connected to a mitzvah, it's not worthwhile. So look what he says here. Just thought that's interesting. La'amercha she'en shechina shora lo mitoch atzus, lo mitoch atzus. The divine presence does not dwell amongst you know, frivolity or idleness or, you know, depression, velo mitoch schok, and not be joking around, velo mitoch kalus rosh, or just lightheartedness, velo mitoch sicha, or not just amongst talking, velo mitoch devarim betelim, or wasting time, el mitoch davar simcha shel mitzvah. The God's presence rests amongst the joy of doing a mitzvah. That's why it says, v'ata kichu li menagein v'haya kenagein menagein v'ti alav yad Hashem. With David, Hamelech, his father, when he experienced depression, he asked for a harpist to come play music, and that lifted his spirits, and that's what made him happy. So the Gemara concludes here, Amar Yehuda, v'chein ledavar halacha. So too, before starting halacha, to learn halacha, you should do it in joy. Some say this means you should, like, have a joke before you learn. Like, a lot of rabbis get up and say a joke first before they begin. That used to be the hardest part of preparing sermons for me, and so I decided to stop because it was a waste. Anyways, so that's one. Amar Rava. Rava says no. V'chein l'chalom tov. If you want to have a good dream, you have to be in a good mood. So they say, the commentators there say, before going to sleep at night, you're supposed to get into a good mood so you'll have good dreams. So some people, I don't know, watch Netflix? I don't know. What do they do to get in a good mood? Get in a good mood before dreams. I thought that's an interesting way that Gemara takes this pasuk to understand that it's about, when he said, simcha, what good is it? What good did it do by joy in life? He meant, no, when it's not of a mitzvah. But when it's for a mitzvah, then it's good to be happy. Yeah.
Is there a difference delineated at all between joy and satisfaction?
Yes. Yes, we're going to come back to that. What does it mean by joy? What's real joy? What's real happiness?
And the other comment about the humor, it's what humor does. I've written comedy all my life. It opens people out.
Uh-huh.
And so they're sort of ready to receive
right.
in a way where they're not defended.
Yeah,
and
it makes sense.
Yeah.
Right, yes. The Talmud Chachma here, I only had it in English, but he says that Shlomo is saying, I never understood what harm could come from joy until I indulged in it and found myself succumbing to temptations induced by lightheadedness. Of course, it opens the heart, but it can open the heart too much. And remember, Shlomo is someone who got himself into a lot of trouble. Remember, that was part of his downfall, which we're going to talk about in a minute. Michael V. Fox says in his commentary, what does it accomplish? Literally, what does this do? Even if it feels good, it does nothing, accomplishes nothing. And Kohelis longs to do something effective, to achieve something substantive. He finds, however, that wine, women, song, and even achievements in building and land development fail to provide a sense of achievement and efficacy. So now he's oscillating between these two extremes. This next pasuk was what really emphasized this. Like, he was going to such extremes trying to find, he was so frustrated, he was like, oh, I'm studying all day and that's not making me happy, so let me go drink all day and see if that makes me happy. So he says, Tarti belibi limshoch b'yayin. So I said, okay, I'm just going to go drink. V'libi nag b'chachma ulechos b'sichlus, and I'm gonna while trying to also. So now he's like, let me see if I can do both at once. I'm gonna now drink and have joy, but also be involved with wisdom. Maybe like wisdom, new wisdom will come out when I'm drunk. I don't know. Adasher ere eze tov livnei adam. Asher yasa tachas shemayim. Now I'll try to see which one's better, because I'm going to do like both at once. He's trying to combine them. That's what it says. Ibn Ezra says here. Kasher ra'iti she'achachma levada tolid ka'ev. When I saw that wisdom by itself makes you pain, gives pain, v'aschok levado lo ya'il, and I saw that just being happy and just trying to enjoy life, that also didn't do any good. Chipasti derech lechaber bein shnehem. I wanted to see if I could combine them and see if I could, because you know, neither of the previous paths worked. So he wants to try a third option of combining both. Yeah.
Isn't there, you know, how Rambam talks about
The Shvil Sahav, the middle path, the Oh, right. Interesting. Yeah.
But yeah, he talks about that in the gross, how it's so important for
him to want to
figure
out. Right. This could be a source for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Right. He's trying to find some kind of middle approach. And it was, in some ways, what?
Please. It sounds like he needs happiness in his learning.
Well, that's what he's going for now, in some kind of like, he didn't have it at first. But and now he's going for happiness, so he's not going for happiness in learning, right? He's going for happiness, like, let me have happiness in kind of like partying and having fun, but also be learning and studying and wise. And he implies that it was like some kind of controlled experiment, right? The next sort, look at this on the top of page 3. Maybe it was a justification, though. Like, maybe it wasn't an experiment, but like the Sforno says here, the Zosan Haga Limshoch Basar B'Yayin, so Basar B'Yayin, so this approach of just like enjoying life, Lo Hiskamti Lat Mirota, I didn't want to do it constantly, Zulasi Arasher Era Eze Chelek Michayi Shah Roi Shivchar B'Bnei Adam. I wanted to, but it was like a test. It sounds to me like a, it's just kind of a justification, but saying it was just a test. I wanted to see if this is good. The Medrash Rabbah there, the next verse, the Medrash Rabbah says, what does it mean, Limshoch B'Yayin? No, it can't mean that he was doing something wrong. It means Begeina Shel Torah. We also refer to wine as being Torah study. That's what he was doing. He was studying Torah, V'libi Noig B'Chachma, when it says here, and I was studying B'Chachma Shel Torah. That's and the echos besichlus, and also doing foolishness stuff, besichlusa betvuna, with the foolishness of certain types of wisdom. And the Torah Tmima there says it must be true that that's what he meant, because how could you be involved with studying when you're also drinking? So it can't. How could you drink and study? It must mean that when it says drinking, it means studying Torah. That's what the Midrash says. Does not seem to be the pshat of what he's saying here. Yeah.
There's also a little bit of kind of a mind-body split here.
Yeah.
Right? Like he's talking about, well, I couldn't achieve the satisfaction or the joy that I wanted just through kind of intellectual ruminations.
Uh-huh.
But I also can't do it just with kind of debauchery. Right?
Uh-huh. Right.
And completely indulging the flesh. So
right.
When he's trying, in this passage, when he's trying to do both, he's like, what if I just do some of the wine drinking, but then also get, you know, keep a little self-control.
Right.
And continue to think about things kind of more.
Right. Naturally. Right. I mean, there is even a tradition, especially amongst, like, mystics, that, like, you know, different types of substances help them connect to God, whether it's psychedelics or whatever it is, and that actually is enhancing their, you know, their service of God. It doesn't sound like he's doing, that's where he's going exactly, but he's just trying to kind of combine both.
Do you have some of that?
Yeah. Not yet, but we're working on getting FDA approval, and then
I feel like also, though, I think if you just, like, listen to the words he's saying in a way without getting into, like, the intensity of it, like, I feel like if, like, when people do Shabbat, right, like, you have the ability to have wine. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't have to be so extreme.
Right.
Like,
right.
Enjoy drink
yes. Well said. Because Judaism is not like an aesthetic religion. It's not like you have to. We're not allowed to enjoy life or drink alcohol or things like that. Like, we're allowed, but it does, there seems to be an extreme here. He goes to, like, these extremes. And he's like, this doesn't make me happy. I'm gonna try this. It doesn't make me happy. It's like, yeah, yeah, yes, Deborah. And then let's go on, because I just realized the time. We're.
This just feels like the anatomy of learning.
What do you mean?
Well, when you learn something, obviously you want to know something that you've never done before. And so you mess up and you do it this way. So it's an interesting, if you step away from it, just to see all the steps he went through, it really is like what it is to learn.
But he just feels like tormented. He feels like he's tormented. But yeah,
he's not comfortable with
life. But maybe that's what this whole book's about. Maybe he's trying to say, like, I suffered, so I want to teach you like what I went through, so you don't make my mistakes. And let me give you some of my wisdom. Going back to that wisdom, right? Mm-hmm. So then he goes on. So this one's really interesting, I thought, because especially with Professor Grossman's commentary on this, which I'll just share with you a bit of it, and then we'll wrap up this couple more psukim. He says, "Higdalti masi." So I multiplied my professions. All right. So now I'm trying everything. Right, I tried wisdom, I tried drinking or whatever. I did multiple things. But niti the batim, I built houses. Natati the kramim, I planted groves. Asiti the ganot and pardesim. Natati behem eitz kol pri, I planted all these trees, and I got servants and slaves and cattle and flocks, and I did all these things. So, in other words, he's saying, like, you know, I've been there, I've done that. I'm someone who has the authority to tell you what's worthless and what I've been through. Because look at what I've done. I've done more things than most people have the opportunity to do in their lives. So I've experienced it. But Grossman points out, if you notice some of these phrases he used, I put them on the sheet there. I didn't translate, but just to give you a sense. For example, in Sefer Devarim, where it talks about someone who newly gets married, some of the exemptions from war. Someone doesn't have to go to war under certain circumstances. For example, it says, "V'dibru." This is here in Devarim Perichaf, Pasuk Hey. "V'dibru ashotrim ela am lemor mi ish asher." Who's the person who's bana bayit chadash, who built a new house? In the next sentence, "Mi ish asher nata kerem." If you just planted a vineyard, so those are people that are not required to go to battle. It's exactly the same thing that Carlos is saying here. The things that I did, those are the things that make someone not required to go to war. There's one other thing, which is someone who, Mia Isha Sher Aras Isha, someone who just got engaged, also doesn't, which he doesn't mention here, which Shlomo had, you know, hundreds of wives. But then again, these are talking about possessions, and those aren't possessions. But the point is, it seems like Shlomo is concerned about, you know, the reason why someone is allowed to not go to war because they just built a house, or they just planted a vineyard, is because yachenu isha, here it is, v'isha acher yichalalenu isha acher yachenu. Someone else is going to take it. V'isha acher yikachena. Someone else is gonna defile it or take it, and you're going to be so preoccupied that you won't be able to fight properly because you just built a house, and now someone else is going to occupy your house, and so you're exempt from the war. So if you think about it, this is Grossman's argument. Shlomo is saying, I did all these things, and now remember what he said in last week's chapters? What happens in life? You just build, you know, sun rises and the sun sets, and then someone else just takes over what was here before. Shlomo Melech was preoccupied with the fact that whatever he built, he's going to lose it. So whatever he had, remember we talked about last week also, he said, like, even if he said, like, if you have children, you're just going to be sad that they're going to die one day. Like, he never could be happy because he's always thinking about the future. And, like, he couldn't just enjoy the moment. He's always like, what's the worst bad thing that's going to happen in the future? So too, he says here, I built, referring to the verses in Deuteronomy, I built a house and I planted vineyards. And just like someone can't go to war when they built them because they're too worried what's going to happen, I couldn't enjoy them either. Because even when I built a beautiful palace, I thought to myself, you know, one day it's just going to be an archaeologist digging it up. It's not going to be me living there, even though that's in 2,000, 3,000 years. He couldn't enjoy it. That's like what he's hinting at here. Someone else is going to take it. I think it's a brilliant insight that Grossman has on this. There's also, he says, it also hints at there's similar words used in Bereishis. We've talked a little bit about how this book, Kohelis, is sort of like Shlomo's commentary on what it was like to be Adam HaRishon, to be Adam. And just like God was V'yita Hashem Elokim Gan Be'eden, God planted in the Garden of Eden, so too, there's a similarity. But the thing is, when God planted, and when God built the world, he said, Ki Tov. He realized it's good. Shlomo builds and plants and he says, Hevel. It's worthless. God knows how to be like satisfied with what he has. Shlomo's like, he just can't be happy. He just can't be satisfied. he's going through the same things that all these people have been through before him, but he can't enjoy it. Let me just show you a couple more. Let's wrap up now. Let's just look at the last couple of verses as he summarizes. It brings us to a close. On page 4, he says, the li, for myself, is constantly stressed. Nachal Eshkol commentary said that Shlomo did not utilize the legal right of a king to expropriate his subject's property for personal aggrandizement, as the Jews were forewarned by Shmuel when they asked him to appoint a king, and he responded, the new king will take your fields and your vineyards. Another time, that was exactly what Shmuel said, those same words, when he said, don't have a king, because they're going to take your property. Whatever taxes he collected went for the house of God. This is this commentary is trying to argue that this was, he was focused on God here. This is an example of the uniqueness of the good that he did. In the next verse, he says, Kanasti li gam kesev ezav, I gathered all kinds of wealth and segulos malachim and all the things that of the kings. So the Gemara, there's an interesting Gemara here that points out that this is what, you know, Shlomo Melech, we know that he sinned. It says many times, the Talmud itself says he sins. Like, for example, right here, the Psikta Rabati I put on the page here, it says, Ashlo chata Shlomo rode b'shedim. This was, he all said this after he sinned. It's very well understood that he did horrible things, particularly with marrying women who were idolatrous and then following after their idolatrous ways. He became an idolater. The king of Israel, you know, became idolatrous. But there is one place in the Gemara says, in Shabbos Nun Vav Amud Beis, I put it here on the bottom of page 4, it says, Amar Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonatan, Kola Omer Shlomo Chata, anyone who says that Shlomo sinned, Eino Ela Toe. They are mistaken. He never sinned. How could he say that? So it goes through a whole analysis, which we're not going to go through now, but if you turn to page 5, it says, no. What happened? He did sin. But what was his sin? Ela mipnei shehaya lo limchos benasha velo micha mala lava kasuf ki ilu chata. The Gemara concludes, he could have protested when others did things wrong, and he didn't protest, and that's what he did wrong. And the Gemara bases it on that verse, which we just read.
They say that about the too.
Yeah. The rabbis are trying to say, like, take it so lightly that these great people sinned. In other words, they did make mistakes. It's very clear. But don't just jump on their backs like, oh, they were so bad. We have to try to understand them in the best possible light, but recognize that they did make mistakes. So it's like David Melch is another example where we learn how to do tshuva from him. We learn how to repent. We learn how to make things right when you did horrible mistakes. So how can you say he didn't do anything wrong when we learn how to make amends from him? But clearly, we have to understand that on his level, he was a great person that accomplished great things and was greater than most average people, but he also made mistakes. That was actually part of his greatness in the end. Yeah.
It's hard to understand what might have been like back in that day when, you know, there was no television, there were no movies, there was no way to, like, get insight into other people's lives, how people operated.
Yeah.
Who would the king's son talk to? Who would be
right. Friend? And the incredible wealth and opportunities he had.
Who would be his friend?
Right.
To be able to. So, I mean,
it's hard to judge them by our standards.
Yeah, I mean, if he's trying to answer the questions that we all explore with a lot of knowledge, and library to go and study, and therapists to go to, and
That was well before that.
Yeah.
He didn't even have ChatGPT, so So let's just look at this last verse. I want to show you one thing here that was interesting. So he finally, you know, takes pride in his wealth here. But this is where I saw, like, as you pointed out, this is where you really see that he doesn't attribute it to God. His goal is to God. This is where it seems to be especially selfish. Look at in Pasuk Tes there. It says, "V'gadalti v'osafti mikol shai lefani b'yushalayim et chachmasi amdali." But it does point out that he does have this one interesting line which says, I accomplished more than anyone else, and my wisdom stuck with me. Like, almost like recognizing that sometimes if someone acts really foolishly, you'd expect them to lose their wisdom, but it stayed with him. Rashi there says, Gam chachmasi lo hinachti bishvil kol ha'masi ma'ela, I did not lose, even though I did all these foolish things, I remained wise. Vam deli v'lo shechachtiha, I didn't forget my wisdom. I didn't forget all these, or davar acher, amdali le'ezra mikol eila, or it stood with me and it saved me. In other words, it helped me. Meaning, I did a lot of foolish things, but it would have been even worse if I didn't have some wisdom like protecting me. I could have done much worse things, which I almost did, but I didn't do it because my wisdom protected me. So there's a very interesting piece here, just to show you as we wrap up. On the next page, it's Hortz Mima quotes here. On the bottom of page 5, I just thought this was interesting. It says there, you know, in the last line, He says, af chachmasi amdali. Nevertheless, my wisdom stayed with me. But af can also mean nose. It can mean anger. So what does it mean, like, my anger of my wisdom stuck with me? Is there any way of reading that, like, metaphorically? So the Midrash Rabbah says, af chachmasi amdali, amar ravacha, amar shlomo, kol tor shlomadati ba'af, all Torah that I learned with anger, niskaima bibiziknusi, it stayed with me when I was elderly. What does that mean? So he says here in the commentary there, now on page 6, on the last page, demirames lemasha lamed beyegia, that which you learn with hard work. Meaning, sometimes to actually, wisdom takes hard work. And part of maybe what he's saying, this whole thing, is he's saying, I suffered a lot. I went through a lot of horrible things. But that hard work is what enabled me to develop wisdom. Just like we say to study Torah, like, it's one thing to, like I joked about ChatGPT, you could just ask ChatGPT a question, or you could, like, really sit down and try to figure out difficult texts and analyze them and discuss them and look at commentaries. Like, when you work at it, it sticks with you. And that's what he's saying here, b'zeas af. I mean, you work hard at something, it sticks with you. Or he quotes another option, which is probably not something we would say today, but I just thought it's interesting. He says, in the last line there, he says, no, it could be another way of reading it is, kol tamad shirabo koesalav. Any student whose rabbi gets very angry at them, through shotek, but then they're quiet, and they just accept it. Zocha lahavchin bein tamay latar. They will truly understand the difference between pure and impure. They will understand things. Zeyu she'amar torah shel lamadati ba'af. The apo shall rabbi, if they learn Torah when their rabbi gets angry at them, uvizchus she shtikasi niskaima torasi, because I was quiet and I just didn't let my rabbi be angry at me, that's why it stuck with me. But anyways, the point is, and you see just in the last source, I'm not going to read it now just because we're out of time, but when he concluded this little section here, and he said that, you know, I didn't withhold from anything, I engaged in all the enjoyments of the world, and everything that you can, and I realized it was all hevel. The Midrash Rabbah does point out there that this was after, and this is where the Midrash says, that what happened was he left his throne one day. He says, "Bishashi yard Shlomo mikiso malach b'demuso yashav aleha." A demon came disguised as him and took over his throne. So now Shlomo was exiled from his throne after having suffered so much, and he actually had to go around. It says, "Hayem mechazer al bate knesios ve al bate midrashos ve al bate gedoli Yisrael v'amar ani kralos haisi melach v'hayu mechinoso b'kani." I had to go door to door and say, I'm Shlomo, I'm the king. But he was begging for money, and no one believed him. They would smack him. But anyways, the lesson from this week's section, you see that excessive selfishness, going to extremes, attempting to do it all and doing it all alone proves futile, but maybe that's the path to true wisdom, and that's what Shlomo ultimately realized, and he wants to educate us through his mistakes, so hopefully we won't make the same mistakes, and I think we can see that a lot of it actually rings true, even though we haven't gone through what he's gone through. None of us have been king, but maybe in our own ways, in our own lives, we've experienced the struggles that he deals with, and hopefully they can be educational.